another misconception about mindfulness, I think, is that you have to sit still on a cushion and you need to be zen and you need to be calm and you need to sit absolutely stoic still and not react to the thing around you. But that's not it. It's just being in the moment and looking, like experiencing it like you've never experienced that moment before, because you haven't. And kids are really good models of that because they're exploring everything for the first time. They don't know how this world works. And when you approach experiences that way, you're being mindful, and it's good for your brain. It's good for your brain. And then it's good for your relationships. It just goes from in out. It's pretty cool.
Welcome to Motherhood in ADHD. I'm your friend, Patricia Sun. My mission is to be a lighthouse for mothers with ADHD, helping you find your path to success by learning to appreciate your ADHD as an asset. I'm seeking to change the paradigm that ADHD means your life is doomed to be a hot mess. So I'm sharing strategies and encouraging you in your pursuit of happiness to love who you are every day of your ADHD life. Hey there, Successful Mama. It's your friend, Patricia Sung. I hope you had a chance to listen to the first part of our conversation with Tasha Post of ADHD Yoga, when we talked about her ADHD journey, being diagnosed at 31. Today, we're diving into our conversation on mindfulness and the brain. We'll talk about the different parts of the brain that ADHD affects, how mindfulness affects our brains, shocker, same parts as the ADHD brain. And we talked about shame, how we tend to stuff our feelings, and setting realistic expectations in order to set ourselves up for success instead of disappointment. We also talked about how do we get started with mindfulness. I also love that we even got into how can we incorporate mindfulness with our kids. Now, before we jump into all that, let's pause a moment and say thank you. Mama, I love hearing your encouragement. This podcast is a labor of love, and I do it for you. So knowing that it's actually making a difference is fuel to my fire. Please take a moment to leave a review on the platform that you're listening on so that I can give you a shout out next episode. This one's from A.H. Moss, called Empowering. You are doing an amazing job encouraging and empowering all of us mamas out there. You are equally educational, relatable, and motivating. The science plus practical tips to overcome struggles of an ADHD brain in parenthood is invaluable. Keep up the good work. I plan on being a longtime listener. Thank you, AH. This is the perfect episode for you. We are getting super sciencey right off the bat. Let's welcome back Tasha. You are definitely a brain nerd like I am, and you love the science behind how our brains work. So can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you fell in love with brains?
I did my undergraduate degree. I did a Bachelor of Science in Psychology and Neuroscience. So I went to all kinds of like brain labs and did all kinds of different brain and neuroscience courses, which I loved. Anatomy was my favorite. And then I very briefly did like a graduate degree, began a graduate degree in neuroscience, and then quit that immediately because academia was not my thing. But when I did my master's in speech therapy, I did my master's degree, like my graduating research project on stuttering and mindfulness. So that's what kind of connected the two together. So I had like this background knowledge in the brain, and then I did my master's project on mindfulness and saw that it actually had, you know, because before that mindfulness to me was just fluff. But then when I saw the science behind it and how it actually literally changes the brain, I became more interested and then just continued to read up on it since then.
Okay, well, random question first. Have you ever actually touched a brain?
I have many brains.
What do
different
they feel
things.
Like?
It's not fair to say because the ones that I touched were full of formaldehyde, which made them really gummy, which made them like very firm. An actual brain is more like a tub of Jell-O or yogurt, like one, like a fresh one. If we like, it's actually very loose. Yeah. It's not as firm as it appears. So the ones I touched were different.
Yeah, preserved. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh, I never thought of my brain as more like pudding. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's like not, it's very jello-y. Weird,
okay.
Right?
Anyway, I just had to ask. I was like, whoa. Okay.
Of course.
So tell me then, how is it that mindfulness makes such a difference in obviously not just ADHD brains, but brains as a whole? Like how does that all connect together?
let's talk about the ADHD brain first. Like the ADHD brain, let's get into it a little bit. Okay. So there's the frontal lobes, right? Like we know the prefrontal lobes in particular, those are the parts of our brain that are responsible for like the executive functioning, like organization, planning, prioritizing, all of that kind of stuff is in the prefrontal cortex, the front of our brain. And so that doesn't work very well in an ADHD or brain. Then the next segment or network that doesn't work well in the ADHD brain is the limbic system. And that's part that's responsible for emotions and for memory. And that's where our hippocampus is, which is like this little seahorse looking structure. The hippocampus is responsible for memory. And then on either side on the bottom of that is the amygdala, which are the little almond shaped things that we all know is associated with fear. It's the fear response in our brain. Mm-hmm. So those are very active in the ADHD brain. And then the basal ganglion system, that's another system deeper down, like a series of structures that's responsible for our attention and impulsivity. And then the reticular formation, it's a bunch of structures in kind of our brainstem that allows the pathways to pass up and down. So those don't really work well in the ADHD brain.
Those are all the sections in our brains that are a little like, not so good.
Okay. Yeah. And the limbic system, like I said, it's a couple structures, like even more than the ones I mentioned. I just don't want to like,
we're not trying to write an encyclopedia, but I just think it's so important that we understand how our brains function because a lot of people think that ADHD is just like behavior choices and it's not. It is rooted in the structural, like the actual physical part of us. And so that gives people a lot of, I don't know if confidence is the right word, but like knowing that it's not something they're choosing. It's
like validation.
That is the word I was looking for.
Oh, there you go.
It's validation to know like it's not a choice that I'm making. This is how I am constructed. Yep. And that lifts a lot of the responsibility and like self-shame.
Yeah, totally. In
that. So that's why I'm excited about this stuff. Yeah. Because we can't hear that too many times, that it is a physical thing, not just psychosomatic thing.
Anyway, totally. Okay. Like you said, like the way our brain is structured, it's the way that it functions. And it's also chemical because also like dopamine and serotonin and norepinephrine are also neurotransmitters that in our brain that are not the same as neurotypical people. And dopamine gets most of the attention. And what they found out recently, research is with ADHD is like, it's not even just that we don't have enough dopamine. Like in some cases, we actually have quite a lot of dopamine. It can either be that we have low levels of dopamine or our reuptake system, like the system that cleans it away, is too efficient. So it cleans stuff away before we can use our dopamine.
Right.
Or we don't have enough receptors for the dopamine. So it can be any of those things. And dopamine is really associated with like mood and motivation and reward. So those are what's going on in the ADHD brain. And like you said, I find that super validating as well. Like it's not, you know, bad parenting and it's not just like upbringing and it's not bad decisions and it's not being a bad kid. It is our brain and it's neutral and that's just the way we're born and it's just the way it's working. So then mindfulness-based stress reduction research. So that's if you guys have ever read like Mindfulness for Beginners or Wherever You Go, There You Are, like Jon Kabat-Zinn is a researcher on mindfulness. And I've read a lot of his books, also Full Catastrophe Living, lots of good stuff. And so research on his kind of mindfulness, paying attention to the present moment on purpose, non-judgmentally, has found that when you have a consistent mindfulness practice, and it doesn't even need to be long, like you don't even need to meditate for hours at a time, but when you have a mindfulness practice, it creates more activation in your prefrontal cortex. And it shifts the activation from the right to the left. So you have more emotional balance, which as ADHDers, we know we need more emotional balance. And we know that our prefrontal lobes are not working properly. That's where all our executive functioning is, right? And then the other thing is that it starts to thicken our hippocampus. And our hippocampus is the part in the limbic system that's responsible for memory. So research has shown improved memory with mindfulness. Also research on Alzheimer's disease. People with Alzheimer's, when they were given a 12-minute mindfulness practice, it improved their cognitive function and their memory. And Alzheimer's, like where their brain is literally like deteriorating and mindfulness was still powerful enough to counter those effects. That's amazing. But in ADHD, again, like the hippocampus is not a super great functioning part of our brain and mindfulness helps change its structure and function. And then also the amygdala, that part of our brain that's responsible for our fear response or that and even associates fear reactions to memories that pop up, amygdala actually starts to thin. So it's not as active and it's not as thick. Like structurally, doesn't have as many neurons. So over time, the fear response starts to reduce when you have more of a mindfulness practice. And then it also increases dopamine levels. So if you have more of a mindfulness practice, you have more dopamine in your brain. So then no matter if you have low levels or a really quick cleaning up system or less receptors, if you have more dopamine in your brain, then at least your brain is more likely to be able to use it. So it's pretty amazing. It kind of feels like mindfulness was just made for people with ADHD because it changes and affects all of the parts of our brain that don't work well and like boosts them all up. It's just amazing to me. Like when I read this, I'm like, wow, all right, fine. I'll have to do this then.
So like knowing that it's so good for our brains, why is it so hard for us to do?
Isn't that the irony of anything that's good for ADHD? Isn't it though? Like, oh, yeah, you just need to like plan and use a planner, but that's so hard. I don't know. But the thing that is reassuring to me is really like, well, like I do know because doing anything consistent is hard for an ADHDer, right? Like we always, and the other thing too, is we already have such a history of letting ourselves down. And I say that with air quotes, but you know, of like deciding that tomorrow is going to be the day that we get our act together and we go to bed at 10 every night, damn it. And, you know, for every day. And then we go to bed at 11:30 and we think that we failed and it brings up all the shame that we've ever had with not following through with a goal and we quit. And we think, what's the point? I'm just going to let myself down. I don't need more proof of how bad I am. And I don't think mindfulness is any different, right? Like, I think we're like, okay, I have all the data. I have all the facts. I know that this is good for me. I know that it will help me improve if I do it. But the practice is not easy. Like, mindfulness is not easy. It's not the most fun. And that's just, you know, like, it really isn't. It's not super exciting. So it's hard to follow through consistently. And it's hard to be aware of the shame when it bubbles up and to choose not to believe it. You know, you don't have to believe it, but we're so used to believing that shame, so used to believing that we're bad people and that we can't take care of ourselves and that we've always failed at the things we've tried to change, that the new practice just becomes another source of shame. And who wants to keep that in their life? So we put it aside and we ignore it and we just decide it's not for us, right?
That was beautiful. I don't think there's anyone, any mama who's going to listen here and be like, oh no, no shame here. I'm good.
Right?
Like, yeah. Every ADHD woman that I have ever talked to, I feel like shame is one of the highest red flags that one I can point out when I'm like, okay, you clearly are one of my people because this is such a big issue for you, but one that is just so hard to break that cycle.
So hard. Like, it's so hard. So, so hard. And I think the reason why for a lot of us, especially if you don't have a whole lot of resources available to you, you know, like professionals, clinicians, coaches, if you don't have that or even a good support network or even other ADHDers, if you're doing this alone and you've kept it a secret and you can't even relate to other ADHDers, you don't even know where to begin dealing with that shame, right? Because like, you think it's just you. I spent so much of my time pre-diagnosis thinking it was just me. Thinking something was wrong and thinking that if I told anybody about how hard all these easy things are, I'd just be made fun of or just have eyes rolled up at me. So if you don't have those people in your life to point out to you, look, hey, these thoughts are just thoughts about how good or bad you are at this. These are just thoughts. You don't need to believe them. And this is shame and it's a feeling and it comes up, but that's okay. You don't need to believe this. And you can just decide that even though you messed up today, you could try again tomorrow and that's enough, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think with ADHDers, like if you're going to start a mindfulness practice, like I said, it's not the most exciting. I'm the first to admit it's not super fun. It's just not. And some days, because it's so misunderstood too, like some days when you do a mindfulness practice and you're all stressed out and you feel your heart racing, you think you're doing it wrong. So then you stop because you're like, I'm supposed to feel peaceful and serene. But really what you're doing is you're pausing and allowing feelings you're not usually letting yourself feel bubble up. And because you're actually seeing them and feeling them for the first time, you think you're doing it wrong. Because again, we have this misconception of what mindfulness is. But mindfulness is just being with the present experience, like I said before. So if you're feeling sad or you're feeling frustrated, you can feel that mindfully. Like you can sit with it mindfully and then you can watch it flush through your body. You can notice that it's there. Notice where you feel it. Notice it moved. Maybe give it a color or a name and then let it dissipate. And then if it doesn't, then you can focus on something more grounding or open your eyes. But that doesn't mean that you did anything wrong. And I think that's another reason why ADHDers stop, because we're like, oh, that didn't feel great. I'm bored, or I'm having thoughts about how boring this is, and I'm not allowed to have thoughts like that, so I'm quitting.
Okay, so no, I want to make sure I review that, because that was a lot of good information at one time. So it's important that we realize that there's not like a wrong way of doing mm-hmm. it. The yeah. whole point is to be aware of how you're feeling. And depending yeah. on the day and what happened and what's going on, you are going to feel different things. Yeah. And a lot of times our brain is like so busy going that we don't stop mm-hmm. to take inventory of how we actually feel.
Yeah.
So when we start sitting with these uncomfortable things, it's like, oh, well, no, thank you. This yes. is pretty terrible, because you're remembering this awful thing that happened, or this thing that you said that you're like kicking yourself for, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to sit with that for a little while. You're like, mm-hmm. oh, this is awful. So yeah, of course, we're all going to be like, no, thanks.
No, thank you. Yeah, totally.
When we're not used to sitting with feelings, we might be like stuffers, where we just stuff them all down.
Totally.
And they almost are worse. Like,
oh, definitely are. Yeah.
And you let them be for a little while, then they do go away eventually. Like, I can't tell you it's like, hey, 5 seconds later, everything's
yeah.
But you sit with them for a little bit and like they work through, it's like they lessen and they dissipate, but you're also allowing your body to like go through it and relax. Mm-hmm. And then you like, you're lowering your stress.
Yep.
Through that.
Yeah, because so, you're not carrying it with you anymore.
Yeah. So like, we're not going to like it, because we're doing parts and like sitting through things that are like, this sounds yuck. Mm-hmm. And we think that we're doing it wrong because we're not just like peaceful oming our way through it.
Yep.
But that's not the goal.
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, maybe people have been doing it for like 20 years. Maybe they get there. I don't know. Is that a thing?
I mean, some people do. I mean, there's books on that. Some people go to like other like planes of consciousness. I'm not that person. But, you know, some people, they do the practice for years and all they do is take a mindful walk and they just pay attention to their senses. And that's it. They listen to the sound of their footsteps and they listen to birds in the distance. And that's their entire practice. But that's still being mindful. The mindfulness is just being with the moment, just letting it be and just observing it. That's what being mindful is. And those can be any number of things. It can be feelings. It can be thoughts that pop up. It can be all kinds of things.
Okay. So knowing that it doesn't have to look mm-hmm. a certain way,
yep.
that it's going to be different for everyone, and that's okay.
Yep.
I feel like gives us a permission slip to enjoy it. Because like, I know when I first started using, I forget what app it was, maybe like Calm or Headspace or one of those, I felt like the whole time, like I wasn't doing it right because I don't feel peaceful.
Totally. Yeah.
And if you feel like you're doing it wrong, why would you stick with it? That makes sense. That makes me feel a lot better of like, the goal isn't to be like,
yeah,
it's just to be you.
Yeah.
And sit there and like, let your body come down a few notches, because we don't do that. We stay at level 10 all the time. Totally. And this is a chance for us to be like,
whoo. Yeah, to sit down and be like, all right, what's actually going on here? What are we experiencing?
Hey, Mama, have you been over to my website and grabbed any of the free ADHD resources I've got? You can make your mornings more peaceful, overcome time blindness hurdles, learn ways to treat your ADHD beyond the obvious medication option, or grab a copy of all of my favorite ADHD resources on one page. You can snag these all on my website at patriciasung.com/resources, and I'll email you the PDF or the video. Now, don't go putting in your spammy junk email, okay? I'm not gonna send you junk. I email you once, maybe twice a week. For sure, I'll send you a note about this week's podcast topic, and if I'm having a particularly organized week, I might email you again about what's working for my ADHD this week, or venting about whatever executive function disaster happened. Your inbox is where I spill more of the beans. And if you change your mind, you can always unsubscribe, right? Plus, I really love hearing back from you. So write me an email back. Tell me what's going on in your life or what you want to learn about next. So go grab those free goodies and I'll see you in your inbox.
When you said earlier about letting go of thoughts, this is one of my favorite things I learned in therapy was letting go of thoughts. I have a little bit of OCD tendencies of like intrusive thoughts where I just like sit on something like dog just clamps on and like don't let go. And so I've spent a lot of time in therapy working through that. And it is such a freeing blessing to know that you don't have to give validation to every thought that passes by.
Yeah.
And like, I've already done an episode on this, so I won't get on my soapbox because I think it's really important. So go listen to that episode. But knowing that we are not defined by everything that passes through our brain is something that most women with ADHD just don't know. Because I definitely have not cured myself of this problem. But
oh, me neither.
Like,
me neither.
When I think terrible things, I place them on my value and on my person. And that's not true. Like, it really is okay to be like, wow, that is not necessary. And I'm going to let it go. Yeah. And not determining my self-worth on some random thing that pops up. I'd be like, hey, not cool, brain. Got to go.
Yeah.
Rather than just like sitting on it and stirring on it. And it breaks my heart when I hear women talk about the level of shame that we carry.
Totally.
Like, that's one of the things I wish I could like get out my megaphone and shout from the rooftops that
me too.
You are valuable and wonderful and amazing and worthy and all of those other things. Like, they don't define who you are.
It's funny that you mentioned that. ADHDers, we have that tendency to ruminate, to just like have a thought or have an experience. And then in our brains, we just make all kinds of stories about what that means about us as a person, how valuable we are, how worthy we are, and all that kind of thing. And that's actually another thing that's part of a benefit of mindfulness, because there's this network in our brain, either called, it's got a couple names, the default mode network or the narrative focus network. And it's the part of our brain that creates those stories about the experiences we have that ties meaning to it, but it can lead to stress and worry and ruminating, that ruminating stressful feeling that we have, because it just tells us these stories over and over again. The thing is that this network is an important structure because it does help us wake up as the same person every day. It ties us to reality. It makes sure that when we wake up in the morning, we have the same memories and we are created as the same person that we were the day before. But also, if it's not kept under control, then it causes all the stress and all this ruminating and all of those self-esteem things that you mentioned. And in ADHD, this network is actually more active than it is in neurotypical people, this default mode network. All of these structures, they're more active in our brains. So this network is kind of like a mind-wandering, daydreamy kind of network in our brain. And it usually kicks in when we're not doing anything. Like if we're just sitting, going for a walk, you know, having a shower, like that's usually when this network like kicks in. But for ADHDers, it's kind of on just like all the time. So when a neurotypical person focuses on a task, a different network kicks in. And it's called the task positive network or the experiential focus network. And it allows us to like stay in the present moment and just focus on the thing we decided to focus on. But for ADHDers, that one will kick in, but then our default mode network will also kick in. So that's why when we sit down to try and focus on something, we still have all these nagging feelings trying to pull us away to something else. Like, nope, you picked the wrong thing. You should be working on this. Nope, you picked the wrong thing. You should be working on this. Nope, remember that stupid thing you said in grade 3? Like, that's the default mode network popping in. And the thing, what research finds with mindfulness is mindfulness actually helps lessen the activation of that default mode network so that we have that task positive network functioning. So we're actually, again, focusing on the thing that we decided to focus on, which in mindfulness is whatever is happening in that moment, whatever specific thing you decided to focus on in that moment. So if you do the practice over and over again, you're getting more activation of that task positive network or experiential focus network and less activation of that default mode network. So you're hearing less of those narratives, less of that negative self-talk, less of that ruminating, and you're less distracted by all of those stories. And you can recognize a thought for a thought. without attaching any meaning about your worth to it. You can just see them come in and then watch them leave. So it's amazing that you mentioned that, because that's another benefit of that mindfulness is like realizing a thought is a thought and that's it.
I think it's valuable to understand that we're getting a benefit in that short term of we're lowering our stress levels, et cetera, like all that in that moment. But also as we're doing this over time, even if it's not perfectly routine and consistent, that over time, we're also gaining benefit there.
Yeah.
A lot of times we need that extra like positive reinforcement. So like the motivation of knowing it's not just this long-term one day in the future, I might have this benefit. It's like also right now, I'm also getting a benefit.
Yeah. Also right now, I am practicing quieting my default mode network. Damn it. It's a little too chatty right now.
Okay. So I could go on like this for a while because I love brains, but in a practical sense, for somebody who's like, okay, this sounds great. How do I actually take the first step? What do I do first?
I would say for ADHDers, let me think, because I feel like we need to take a couple like preliminary steps before we even jump into a mindfulness practice, because we so much have that tendency of like, okay, starting tomorrow, I'm going to do 5 minutes a day every day. And then we don't. And then we get upset, right? Mm-hmm. I think a preliminary step for ADHDers is just deciding ahead of time that this is going to be good for me no matter how often I show up. And just count on yourself being inconsistent and just come up with a thought that you're going to tell yourself when you start to beat yourself up. That's what I would say for ADHDers first. Recognize that you'll be inconsistent. And then when you notice you're beating yourself up, just decide what you're going to do to be kind to yourself. Like, hey, I can always do it tomorrow. Or even just make a concrete plan to do it tomorrow. Or, hey, I'm not a robot. I'm just being a human with an ADHD brain, showing up exactly like I'm supposed to. And then make a time for it. I think that's an important preliminary step for ADHDers. It's just anticipating and assuming you'll be inconsistent and just creating shame resilience towards that. Just know it's going to happen. And then when it does, you didn't do anything you didn't expect.
I think that's really important for us to do, because we go in with this mindset that we have to be perfect. And if we don't do it 8 times in a row for exactly 30 minutes, that it's not useful. And that's not true. Like we are all or nothing people, and we set ourselves up for this goal. And we think because we missed 1% that somehow the other 90% wasn't useful or valid. Like a lot of times I have to check myself and be like, Patricia, you did 99%. Like,
yes,
that is still really great. Calm down. Or even if you got like 50%, like anything that you're doing to take care of yourself is better than not taking care of yourself at all.
Totally. Exactly. Like if you planned on meditating every day for a month when you weren't meditating at all before that, and you showed up twice that month, that's still so, that's like, like 200% more than you ever did before, right? So that's a win. So just prepare for the inconsistency and just don't make that mean anything about you. Just know that that's just your ADHD showing up exactly how it was built to show up.
Mm-hmm. And when we expect that, and we know going in that like, hey, it's going to be great anyway, good for me, then we lower our like shame threshold, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that we don't dive down that spiral. So the next thing I would actually try, just do small practices and look for some informal practices. Like I think for ADHDers, some really good ones are just paying attention to your senses. And you can do this even in just daily activities like washing your dishes, like paying attention to the temperature of the water changing as you do your dishes for 5 minutes, or go for a walk and just listen to all of the sounds that you can notice, or just go through all of your senses systematically. So like look at all of the colors and notice all the textures you see and all the colors you see and all the shapes that you see, and just really paying attention to all of your senses one at a time. Because I feel like for ADHDers, that makes it really concrete. I feel like going in and watching your thoughts right away, that's more advanced, because if you're not at a point yet where you can't detach meaning from your thoughts, that's a scary place to go.
Yeah.
I think sticking with your senses is a really good one. And sticking with your breath, doing some mindfulness practices with your breath, like counting your breath. And you can find some really good resources and guided meditations on some free apps. Like my very, very favorite is Insight Timer. It's free. And it's got like tens of thousands of free meditations on there. And you can just search senses, like mindfulness and senses. You can search a mindful walk. You can search mindful breathing and just allow yourself to do it for 5 minutes to start and just know that that's enough. You do not have to go in for an hour-long practice right away. Do 5 minutes here and there and then integrate it into some routines that you have, like showering and doing dishes and making your bed, folding your laundry. You can definitely practice mindfulness in those scenarios, just paying attention to all of your senses. So just little bits at a time.
Well, that's what our brain needs is mm-hmm. baby steps.
Yes.
Little bit by little bit. And I think what I love from a mom perspective is that when you talk about the things like being aware of your senses and looking at the colors, and those are things that we already do with our kids.
Totally. So
if you can take a step back and be like, hey, you already talk to your kids like this as a general thing of like, oh, look at that red. Can you find something red? Like we talk about with toddlers all the time. Obviously, like not if you have a 10-year-old, but
yeah.
I think we already have this predisposition in parenting mm-hmm. that we already are aware of those types of things. So if you're looking at like, hey, I already have experience in pointing out colors and like thinking about our senses. So you already have like step one experience yeah. level, like that's already there. And this is also something we can do with our kids. Like we can just go on a, don't get me wrong. Sometimes going on a walk with my 3-year-old is like the most painful thing ever because we literally walk like 4 houses down in 30 minutes. But you go in with the mindset of
with that intention,
we're just going to enjoy what's here. And yeah. like, sure, let's stop and look at the pine cone. Let's see what's inside there. Does it have its seeds? Like we can create those moments in our day without having to make it like another thing in our to-do list.
Yeah.
Is incorporate it into what you're already doing.
Totally.
It can be done. Like obviously mindfulness with children around is not the same as mindfulness by yourself. But like if that's where you are, again, mm-hmm. like we said, some mindfulness is better than no mindfulness. So if mm-hmm. that means studying pine cones on a walk, that's better.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah.
Keep moving.
You're totally right though, because like toddlers, they're so mindful. It's like we learned as adults to not be mindful anymore. There's actually a term in like mindfulness called beginner's mind. Like that's what you're supposed to approach every moment with, is this concept of a beginner's mind. Like you're seeing everything for the first time, even if you've done it a million times before. Because honestly, every experience we have is for the first time. Like even if you've had a million cups of tea, if you sit down and have a cup of tea, you have never at any point had it at that exact minute in that exact outfit surrounded by the same people at the same table in the same position. That is your mm-hmm. first time having that cup of tea. So when you approach an experience like going for a walk with your kid, for them, that kid, that's the first time they're ever going on that walk. And we can learn so much from them when they're like, oh my gosh, look at this pine cone. And as an adult, we're like, oh my God, this is like the 200th freaking pine cone we've looked at today. But you know, if you're like, we're being mindful, like this is beginner's mind. This is mindfulness. Let's look at this pine cone. Like we've never seen a damn pine cone before. And that's mindfulness. That's totally it. Beginner's mind.
So I think we all have been there in that place and we know that feeling. And if we can just embrace it and enjoy that time with our kids, like what a gift that is to them as well. And literally mm-hmm. like any person that you are with, when you have that level of mindfulness and you're truly paying attention to mm-hmm. them and what you're doing and going all in on yeah. that moment with them, like people feel that.
Yeah.
And that's something that we can do like literally at any point in our day. It doesn't have to be a scheduled checkbox. So
yeah. I know that's the thing that's really amazing about it, because that's another misconception about mindfulness, I think, is that you have to sit still on a cushion and you need to be zen and you need to be calm and you need to sit absolutely stoic still and not react to the thing around you. But that's not it. Like it's just being in the moment, experiencing it like you've never experienced that moment before because you haven't. And kids are really good models of that, because they're exploring everything for the first time. They don't know how this world works. And when you approach experiences that way, you're being mindful, and it's good for your brain. It's good for your brain. And then it's good for your relationships. It just goes from in out. It's pretty cool.
Mama, let's pause there. Be sure to hit subscribe so that next week's episode shows up right on your podcast app. And next time, we're going to talk about the four parts of mindfulness, why our ADHD brains tend to struggle with it, and what can we do about it to make mindfulness doable in mom life. Talk to you soon, Successful Mama.
Thank you for listening to Motherhood and ADHD. For more resources, head over to our website, www.motherhoodandadhd.com.